You're listening to CKTZ 89.5 FM, Cortez Community Radio, cortezradio.ca. I'm your host, Maureen Bader, and this is Art on the Island. During the program, I'll speak live with Cortez Island artists. We'll talk about their stories, their inspirations, and their current projects. Best of all, you can call in to ask questions and make comments. Call into the studio at 250-935-0200. Listen most Fridays between 9 and 9:30 a.m. And welcome to Art in the Island. Today we have on the show Laurel Borchardt. Laurel, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Great. So you've been living on the island here for quite some time, no?
Yes, about 13 years.
Oh, that's a goodly amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And what made you take up... So what you really do is taxidermy.
Yes, that's right. Mostly birds.
And when we think about taxidermy and art, what is it we're really talking about?
Well, taxidermy is a form of sculpture. But there's lots of other components. For instance, measurements one has to take, drawing out the specimen, drawing various parts of its anatomy, taking more measurements once it's skinned in order to fabricate a body, which will go back inside the bird, incorporating wing and leg bones, tail bones, the skull, and these days, the neck.
Hmm. So have you done much study in terms of sketching and drawing?
I do lots of that, but I have a background in ornithology to start off with.
Ornithology
is the study of birds. I started when I was 7.
Wow.
I first saw a burst of pigeons in Trafalgar Square in London on our way to Nigeria. My parents were medical missionaries.
Oh, interesting.
And I learned how to skin birds out there when I was 11. We had some friends who were missionary kids, and we all had access to guns, and so we collected, and it wasn't against the law then, to collect certain birds,
mm-hmm.
and some of which the Nigerian children liked to eat, and others which were taboo.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones which were taboo, I tend to skin and mount.
And why would a bird be taboo?
Well, certain cultures have different understandings of what you can and can't eat. For instance, in Nigeria, among the Igala people, where we were in, which is now Kogi State, it was Kwara State. This was the 1960s to early 1970s. And birds such as weaver birds, which build weaver nests, were edible. They could eat them, and they could eat hawks, but not owls. They didn't eat kingfishers or bee-eaters, which are related to kingfishers, but they could eat bulbuls, which are a form of thrush.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no idea. It was never explained to me why they had a taboo,
mm-hmm.
just that they did. And they were very careful about keeping to that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you couldn't eat, of course, was pigs, because much of the villain was Muslim,
mm-hmm.
about a third Christian and the other third pagan. And they all had different understandings of what you could and couldn't do and could and couldn't eat.
So why did you then decide to take up taxidermy?
Well, my grandfather was a taxidermist.
Oh, okay.
And it seems to run in the family.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know much about taxidermy when I was 11. When I was 13, we went back to Canada for a year. My father needed further training in medicine. He was a doctor. And... we ended up staying with my grandparents, and he had a full taxidermy business in his basement after he'd retired as a manager for Overweighty back then.
Oh, okay.
He had been interested in taxidermy as a boy, and he sent me his books from the early 1900s when he was a boy, and some of them were actually fairly... a well-known one by a gentleman called Hornaday, who had worked in museums in the States and in England. So I learned about museum taxidermy, and he had deer heads he was doing and bear rugs and mm-hmm. things like that. And he showed me how to skin birds and mount them. And so when I went back to Nigeria in 1968, when I was 14, I did most of my mounting. And then I did learned how to do study skins, which is the scientific end of taxidermy.
Mm-hmm. So you studied formally study skins? Or?
Yes, I became a zoologist. I went to UBC in the 70s
mm-hmm.
and finished my master's degree in Texas Tech in Lubbock, Texas, which was one of only two universities in North America which had a museum science program. One was back east in Ontario, and the other was Texas Tech. And because my professor of the time, Mr. Carriage, was working with another professor at Texas Tech on saurex species, that's shrews,
mm-hmm.
and also bats.
Mm.
So I went down there on his recommendation and lived right next door to the ornithology professor. And so I did lots of work for that museum as a student, mm-hmm. study skins and a few mounts. And then when I graduated, I looked for work up here, and of course there wasn't any. So my first husband and I started a taxidermy business in Duncan called L&M Taxidermy Service.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much learned on the job. I had books, and I learned by doing. I didn't actually have much formal training
mm-hmm.
until a few years ago. And then I went to a bird taxidermy seminar in South Surrey, the master bird taxidermist, Glenn Browning. And this was just as we put up her first Wild Cortez exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
So I was simply working on my old training I'd had for years and innovating here and there. When I also worked for a taxidermist in, Victoria, in Saanich. His name was Mike Moss. I worked for him for about 3 months and learned his methods, but we ended up rather badly because he was rather short-tempered and threatened me a few times.
Oh.
So, yes. Anyway, unfortunately, people in Campbell River and areas will remember him.
No.
He's quite, he did wonderful work,
mm-hmm.
but his character wasn't so wonderful.
Interpersonal skills.
Interpersonal skills were rather poor. But his fish are legendary. They're gorgeous.
Mm.
Did wonderful rugs. And this was all commercial taxidermy. But I also did, over the years, the other side of it for me was doing the more scientific end, which was study skins.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for Vancouver Island University. And the RBCM, 1 year and 2 months, I spent 2 months down there doing study skins for a collection of small mammals that came from northern BC, mostly voles, some shrews, some mice. So I spent 2 months doing 475 study skins.
Holy cow.
And I kind of slept and ate, did study skins in my sleep. Then I came back to Nanaimo, where I had my business, which was, back then, it would have been fin and feather taxidermy. And I did everything, including fish. I think I must have done 100 fish in my life. I don't know.
Hmm.
Anything from salmon to rockfish.
Mm-hmm. Is there a big market? Do people?
This was all, it's a service.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing, it's not really retail.
Mm-hmm.
You're opening business for hunters and fishermen.
Right.
And in Duncan, before the big recession in the 1980s, I did, I forget how many deer heads, all blacktails. I've done mm-hmm. elk and moose and rugs anywhere from cougars and wolves to mostly black bears, a few grizzlies, the occasional. Oh, we redid the tiger rug at the Empress.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yes, you can redo them. We also did, worked on mounts that had been old and needed refurbishing.
Mm-hmm.
Some that needed cleaning had been in hot, smoky hotels and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've done anything from hummingbirds on up. So hummingbirds are difficult.
I can imagine.
You need a magnifier, and you fashion your own tools out of toothpicks.
Because they're so tiny.
Well, it's not that; it's the anatomy. Because hummingbirds related to swifts, and swifts have large chests and very, very short legs.
Mm-hmm.
So to find the knee on a swift, which is incorporated in a mount, or in a hummingbird, for instance, like swifts, the knees are very hard to locate. So I'm working under a magnifier, and I have to sand down toothpicks to the right shape in order to probe down past the skin, where I don't want to make holes, of mm-hmm. course, to lift up the knee so I can snip it with a pair of very small scissors. And the leg on a hummingbird is about half an inch long. So from the knee to the ankle, which is a part you incorporate in the mount, and then you have to cut the tendons at the ankle and remove the flesh mm-hmm. very carefully. And later on in the mounting process, you have to wire that leg. And I'm using 30-gauge wire, mm-hmm. which I'm getting from Michaels because it's part of floral arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
So sources are interesting. And for very small animals and birds, sometimes you have to make your own eyes.
Oh.
Well, normally, I get all my supplies from taxidermy supply houses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on here, I see. Taxidermy supply house, for instance, let's see. There's one, Research Mannequins Incorporated in Oregon. And also AAA Taxidermy Supply in Edmonton. There's a few other taxidermy supplies, but Home Depot, I get methyl hydrate from. I can get acetone from places like that. So that acetone and methyl hydrate are used in cleaning grease off skins.
Mm-hmm.
And borax, they use a lot of borax in fluffing, refluffing the skin. Once you've skinned a bird, you have to flesh it. That means take all the flesh and fat off the skin. Then it's washed, and I use, it sounds strange, but I use a drill set in a vise
mm-hmm.
with a wire wheel to remove fibrous tissue from the skins because the feather quills push right through the skin, mm-hmm. and they're attached by muscle tissue to the body itself. When you see a bird fluff its feathers,
mm-hmm.
every single feather is connected by a very tiny strand of muscle tissue. It allows the birds to erect the feathers up, and then when they relax their muscles, and then it droops the feathers down.
Oh, that's how that works.
That's how that works. Mm-hmm. It's bird anatomy is totally fascinating.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Absolutely.
So if someone takes a look at your birds, say down at the Wild Cortez exhibit that we'll talk about a bit later, mm-hmm. can they tell that you have your own style, or is your
yes.
style different from... People look at a bird, at an eagle, and they say, well, that's Laurel's eagle, and someone else's eagle.
Well, everyone, every artist, and every taxidermist is an artist of whatever level, has their own style.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell mine instantly from anybody else's. I can identify mine. And I might be able, I could identify Glenn Browning's, for instance. He has a certain style. And Stefan Cephides in Oregon mm-hmm. has his own style. Other bird taxidermists have all their own style. But what makes an excellent or an award-winning taxidermist mm-hmm. from the regular good taxidermist is the way they have a head moving, maybe a bird's preening a feather, maybe it's lifted 1 foot. Most taxidermists these days tend to use mannequins and forms they get from a supply house.
Mm-hmm.
If you make your own, though, and every bird is different
mm-hmm.
in the species, then each set of measurements is slightly different. That body that you've made as a craft taxidermist is unique to that mm-hmm. particular bird. You can buy forms, and a lot of people do, and they look wonderful. And most hunters are happy with the results. But if you want to enter a competition,
mm-hmm.
you have to make your own forms.
Where would you compete?
Worldwide taxidermy competitions are all over the place. I don't compete.
You don't?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't have the travel money or the interest, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm way too busy here to even think about going anywhere. If I can get back to South Surrey for the third time and have another seminar, I'd be very happy.
Hmm.
But Glenn better not charge me this time. He told me it's probably the third time's free.
So what sort of things are you working on right now?
When I can get back to it, I'm to finish mounting a rockfish.
Oh.
A speckled rockfish, which was donated by, I think, Brent Petkow here on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And his daughter, Hannah Petkow, did all those wonderful paintings for the backdrops for Wild Cortez. And I've got a big installation going into the atrium when I can find time to do it.
The atrium is at the Linnea.
It's at Linnea.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be an eagle, the third eagle,
mm-hmm.
found by Samantha Moore on Bartholomew Road.
Mm-hmm.
And it hit the power lines.
Oh.
And broke its neck. It, well, it didn't impact. There was no frizzled feathers, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
And but being a young bird, it probably had its eye on something in the distance and didn't notice the wires and so broke its neck. So she, that one's going to be suspended somehow
mm-hmm.
in the atrium with one set of talons embedded in the rockfish. And the other set hanging free as the bird is evading two gulls and a vulture.
That's right. So you actually had a raven at the schoolhouse gallery during
yes,
the group
in
show.
Flight.
That's right. You it had, so you had mounted it up there. How did you do that? How did you do that?
Well, found the bird hit on the road on the highway. No, actually, no, that was in a Welltown Road. Got a permit for it. And permits. Okay, let's go into permits for a mm-hmm. minute. The museum has to have two sets of permits. One is the migratory bird permit, which is renewed every year for $10. And I have to have a migratory bird permit in order to mount migratory birds as a taxidermist. However, the province doesn't have a similar permit for doing provincial animals, which includes most wildlife,
mm-hmm.
including all the fur bearers, large game, small game, and birds like ravens, crows, jays, pheasants and grouse and things like that. Pheasants and grouse are game birds.
Right.
The others are not game birds, but crows, for instance, you can legally take with a hunting license. So if you happen to be a taxidermist with a hunting license like me,
mm-hmm.
and tags for deer, because I also take deer for food, if you find a dead raven, for instance, the only place you can shoot them, but the only place you can legally shoot them in this management unit is Salt Spring Island.
Oh.
Why, I don't know. Other places in the province you can, and you can take up to 5 in a year if
but
they're
you
harassing
have
you. But you have to have a hunting license.
Yeah.
If you find a dead bird, provincial bird, you can get a permit for that. So permits for every bird but a raptor is $31. A raptor is for $65.
Mm.
When the Liberals came into power, they changed the permit from $10 for everything up to $65 for raptors because they're more, you know, showy.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything else is $31. So I got my permit down in Nanaimo at the regional office there. And when I had the permit, I thought about what I wanted to do with the raven. Because ravens are highly symbolic birds.
Yes.
And especially important to First Nations
mm-hmm.
Culture. And myths, and also they're important in Celtic mythology.
Oh, that's interesting.
They're Bran, the Irish god Bran, B-R-A-N, was a raven.
Hmm.
And Bran was a sacrificial god. And the Morrigan, who is related to crows, the crow goddess,
mm-hmm.
and ravens, also Odin, remember? Hugin and Munin.
Yes.
His two ravens. And so it's a circumpolar thing with ravens. They're always sacred birds. They're related to the beginning of creation,
which is very interesting. That's one of the...
So that's why I mounted the raven flying
mm-hmm.
with a veil of stars.
Right.
Holding actually lapis lazuli ball, which I got years ago from some esoteric store. I forget which one. And so the ball in her beak. So I mounted her open mouth with her tongue, which I preserved with a mixture of formaldehyde and alcohol, and then injected with Master's Blend, which is a liquid AB epoxy, which solidifies things
mm-hmm.
inside. So that gave her tongue back. And then I modeled the inside of her mouth with AB epoxy putty, mixed with paint, black paint. Because
mm-hmm.
a mature raven has is black-tongued and black-mouthed on the inside. All the corvids, which includes the family Corvidae, which is the jays and crows, and nutcrackers and ravens. So all of them, as far as I know, the young birds are pink when they come out of the egg, and then as they mature, and it takes ravens at least 2 years to mature,
mm.
that pink gradually fades to black. So I can immediately tell an immature raven from an adult by looking inside the mouth. The other way to tell, you have to skin the bird, and the skull isn't completely ossified for about a year.
Oh, okay.
And so I can tell that. But this particular bird, it was a female. And to me, the female, being related to what you might call the Holy Spirit,
mm-hmm.
so the spirit of creation, sung for us by the Great Spirit, who might be masculine, I don't know. And so she is carrying creation in her mouth.
Oh, okay.
So she comes from the firmament, or from the void, and she's carrying creation, in this case, the earth, in her mouth. So I wanted to convey that as an art piece.
Well, that really took quite a bit of imagination. Where did you come up with that idea?
Oh, legend, myth, history. I tend to be interested in esoteric studies and mysticism and magic, and so I got involved in that years ago. And birds are very, to me, very spiritual creatures in their way. And so I like to convey that. And each bird, to me, is different and important.
So there's a message you're trying to convey.
I'm trying to convey messages. When it comes to Wild Cortez, the only message I'm trying to convey there is this is what the bird is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Most birds don't sit still for any length of time. If you're a taxidermist and all your birds look the same, like my grandfather's did, he mounted birds two ways, sitting and looking straight ahead, or with their wings open looking straight ahead. He never had them flying.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have them engaging in things with their behavior. The important part about birds isn't so much the appearance as what they're doing. And why are they doing it?
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch, say, a flock of siskins, they're always interacting. They're never still. If you watch warblers moving through trees, they're always hunting. And every bird is a hunter. They're always looking for something to eat.
So we've talked now a couple of times about the Wild Cortez exhibit. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, actually, that started when I came to the island in 2005. Because I met up with Lynn Jordan, and she used to work at the Vancouver Aquarium. And she asked me, she got to know me, and she asked me what my background was. I said, I'm a taxidermist. Well, also was an LPN at the time. And she said, oh, well, I have a frozen parrot. His name is Nipper. I said, oh, what kind of parrot? An African gray. I said, I grew up with African gray parrots flying overhead, jabbering in a gala. Which, because they picked up by flying.
The language, yes.
They picked up the language. And it was nonsense words, but it sounded really good, right? Flock of five or six were jabbering away in a gala, flying over our mission station. 11-year-old girl going, wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
So I mounted Nipper for her, and she said, well, I have an otter. So we started doing some taxidermy in the museum.
Mm-hmm.
First few things I did were, people were started bringing dead birds in because they heard I did taxidermy. Mm-hmm. And we started off with Raven's Relations with the Songbird exhibit. And then the first Wild Cortez exhibit happened in 2011. So we expanded Raven's Relations and included seabirds, we included the raptors that we had, and I think the first eagle.
So Wild Cortez is down at Linnea Farm, and there you've got, as you mentioned, your Raven's Relations are in sort of the middle of a larger exhibit that shows something.
The larger exhibit came from the first exhibit that we had from 2011 to 2013. We managed to keep it for 2 years, and then it had to go into storage. So it had all these, Wild Cortez is a story of water. So we have waterfalls on the bluffs, and then it trickles down. We wanted to portray all the ecosystems that we could on Cortez, which is common to all of BC and to most places. Because if you think about it, waterfalls on the heights, anywhere, and then trickles down, becomes streams, into rivers, and then into lakes, and wetlands, and in our case, it flows from wetlands by streams such as Basil Creek running through the back of my 5 acres down to the sea. And so everything being connected, you have the bluffs, and then you have the forests surrounding the bluffs, and then forests give way to wetlands, and then the sea, the marine environment. So we have birds and other creatures related to each of these environments. So that's why the marine exhibit has a seal, which my husband and I found in 2007, abandoned by its mom that just died.
Oh, poor thing.
I know. And we were the seal and seabirds and ducks and things like that. And that's why we have a mink. with its eye on the Virginia Rail, and the Virginia Rail came from Gunflint Lake. Paula Philippin had cats.
Mm-hmm.
And a cat bringing her specimens. So all those came to the museum, too. Mm-hmm. So we ended up having to dedicate a freezer to the museum's dead birds, which is about half full right now since I've mounted more.
So people can see your work at the Wild Cortez exhibit at Linnea.
At Linnea.
Anywhere else? Or?
No, that's... Well, the museum still has a few.
Mm-hmm.
And we still haven't moved the nighthawk over there, and there's or the hummingbird, things like that. But it went into storage, and so many people asked for a Wild Cortez back again
mm-hmm.
that we decided, let's go for that big Canada 150 grant, which we got. So then we were able to bring Wild Cortez out of storage, and we found the old library down at Linnea
right.
and formed a partnership with Linnea Educational Center and with three or four other entities. And we were able to set it back up again. And now I'm going to be, now it's all set up, I can go and mount the rest of the exhibit.
So is there any kind of advice you'd have for someone who might be interested in learning about taxidermy or becoming more informed about animal?
Now, if they want to learn about taxidermy, they can Google it. There's plenty. There's online courses you can take. The best thing to do is to go and find a taxidermy school and take the courses and learn how to do it formally
mm-hmm.
and learn all the proper procedure. Don't do it the way I did, which was by guess and by golly, making lots of mistakes, reading lots of books. I have a whole library of taxidermy books, most of which are from famous taxidermists. Who worked in museums. The other way to do it is to get involved with a museum who has wildlife mounted.
Mm-hmm.
Find the museum taxidermist and bug them mm-hmm. until they let you watch. And then they'll eventually let you work on something, starting probably with rats, probably with crows.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with taxidermy is that most specimens are hard to come by. Unless you happen to be a farmer, who doesn't mind, you know, selling chickens
mm-hmm.
for mounting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Quail are perfect to start with. Crows. Smaller birds, no. Starlings are fine. But a lot of birds have very thin skins, and unless you know exactly what you're doing, you end up with skins and pieces, which I did. Age of 11, skinned my first pigeon. 3 pieces.
No.
Hardly any feathers.
Well, Laurel, that was really fantastic and very informative. Where can people see or how can they see your art or get in contact with you?
Well, they can get in contact through the museum. I do private work. Quite happily, I've got owls on the go for people.
Mm-hmm.
So I still do work for Vancouver University. I study skins and mounts. I still do it for Hornby Natural History Exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I take private customers quite happily.
And do you have an email or any or a website? Or
I don't have a website. I have a phone number and email address, heartwood@explorenet.ca. And I'm in the phone book under Bo Hart. I don't advertise because I'm kind of up to here with work to do. So, but I'll happily help people through the process, explain about licenses and tags if mm-hmm. they want to do a deer head or a rug. And I prefer those to go to other taxidermy houses. I like to do birds.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Art on the Island on CKTZ 89.5 FM, Cortez Community Radio, cortezradio.ca. Your host was Maureen Bader. If you are a Cortez Island artist and you'd like to be on the program, please send me an email to artcortezradio@gmail.com. Bye for now.